Welcome back to the Hemingway List, the podcast where we do things the Hemingway. Today we're talking about Anna Karenina, Part 2, Chapter 26. Now, the discussion prompt was simply BYO discussion prompt, because I hadn't listened to Nifty Riffic's reading of Chapter 26. And I've got a confession, I still haven't. So I still haven't heard Chapter 26 or read Chapter 26. So I'm going to read the discussion that happened around it, but not really be able to contribute much because I haven't read it yet. I think that might be the first time in all of this podcast, even going back through last year, where that's been the case. Although you could argue that the entire book of the Brothers Karamazov, it was kind of like that, because I really didn't feel like I was reading that book. Nothing was sinking in. I am Norwegian, said Mr. Karenin is burying his head in the sand, working himself to death to avoid dealing with his situation. I wonder if Anna is going to notice her husband's declining health and connect the dots. A friend of mine, an old friend, I don't really see him anymore, but you know, someone I kind of grew up with, once told me that his dad was a workaholic. And I'm like, oh, that's good, hardworking man. And he's like, no, it's not good. Like, he uses keeping himself busy and working as like a coping mechanism, and it's this cycle of it wears him out. He's run down all the time. He's stressed out of his mind all the time. And he was telling me about that, and he's like, yeah, I'm telling you that because that's what you do. He's like, you do the same thing that my dad does. And he said that about me, and I remember thinking like, nah, that's not me. But that was a few years ago he said that. And I think more and more since then, I've definitely done that. Definitely. I did, when I was starting up my business, this year has been a bit of slack by my standards. I'm still working, you know, more than a full-time working week. But in the first few years of starting my business, I was working every day, 7 days a week for like 3 years straight without a day off. And things like 70, 80, 90 hour weeks were standard. And even during that, I wouldn't have said I was a workaholic. I would have just said, oh, you know, I've got a lot to do. Anyway, without reading the chapter, it sounds like Karenin might be a bit the same. Because you do it as a distraction almost. You know, like if I stay busy, I can't, I don't know, regret whatever I regret, or, you know, feel these things, whatever, I don't know, whatever he's trying to escape from via work. Maybe. Is it something like that? Tech Riffic says, keeping up appearances is just what Karenin would do, isn't it? Visiting his wife at their summer home, dealing with financial matters, especially making sure his wife's allowance was paid at the usual date. Health issues? Nothing serious, it seems. What was in the pamphlet? I miss the significance of it, except that it made Karenin feel good about himself. Was that the point? We learn that he's vexed with his wife for not wanting to engage him in a serious conversation, but he treats her with outward respect. He is, on the other hand, colder towards his son, and the poor boy seems to get the brunt of his frustration. However, in a Lasonic and mock-ironic way. Lasonic. I need to find out what that word means.
Laconic.
Of a person, speech, or style of writing, using very few words. Laconic. Nifty Riffic said the pamphlet was about the celebrated traveller, a celebrated traveller that apparently had just come from his travels in China. I think the only real significance is that it was given to him by his friend the Countess Lydia Ivanovna. I guess it is just an expression that they have interests in common. Her sending the pamphlet to him after it was mentioned that he began to avoid her because of her criticism of Anna Lydia Ivanovna was mentioned numerous times in this chapter. She sends the pamphlet and the doctor. Okay, very cool. Well, that's the discussion. I'm going to have to go back and listen to that chapter, and I'll have to do it out of order because now we're going to read chapter 27. So that's not ideal, but I'm sure it won't affect the book too much. Tonight's episode is brought to you by the beverage hot chocolate, which I am sipping out of a gigantic mug. And it's so good. It's so good. You just drink it and you feel it go down your neck and then into your chest. It warms you up. Hot chocolate. Get yours today. You can also get, if you want to get something today, you could get one of my novels. You could buy one of my novels if you want. That could be cool. Go to Anderlouis, anderlouis.com. Anderlouis.com. And you can click on products and you can see my novels. I've got two fantasy novels out. One came out in 2012, one came out in 2014. Adventure books. You know, I'm no Tolstoy, but if you want a fun little fantasy adventure from when I was sort of cutting my teeth in the writing game, there you go. It's interesting for me looking back on those books because a lot of people like them, which is great. And I like them too. But for me, it's like when you've listened to a band that you love and you go back to their early album and it's very grungy, that you can tell they're a garage band and the production is low and they don't know a lot of chords yet. And some of your favorite songs might be on that grungy 3-chord album and it's still your favorite band, but it's a bit rough around the edges. That's how I look back at especially my first book and my second book and my early writing. It's like, yeah, I can still see me in it, my style, my voice, but it's kind of rough. But I don't mind that. I don't think it needs to be spruced up or anything. Anyway, why am I talking about this? I don't know. I'm just getting sidetracked. There you go. There's a thing you could do. Go and get yourself a book. I think they're on Kindle as well, or you can buy them on my website. Chapter 27. Goes like this. Anna was upstairs, standing in front of a mirror, pinning, with Anushka's help, a last bow to her dress, when she heard the wheels of a carriage grating on the gravel at the entrance. It is too early for Betsy, she thought, and glancing out of the window she saw the carriage, and sticking out of it a black hat and Karenin's familiar ears. How unfortunate. Can he mean to stay the night? Thought she, and so awful and horrible appeared to her the consequences that might result there from that. Without a moment's hesitation, she went out to meet him with a bright, beaming face, and feeling within herself the presence of the already familiar spirit of lies and deceit, she gave herself up to it at once and began speaking without knowing what she was going to say. "Ah, how nice this is," she said, giving her husband her hand, and smilingly greeting Slyudin as a member of the household. "You're staying the night, I hope," were the first words, prompted by the spirit of lies. "And now we shall go together. Only it is a pity that I promised to go with Betsy. She will be coming for me." Karenin made a grimace at the mention of Betsy's name. "Oh, I will not separate the inseparables," he said in his usual facetious tone. "I will go with Slyudin. The doctors have ordered me to walk. I will walk part way and imagine that I am still taking the waters." "There is no hurry," said Anna. "Would you like some tea?" She rang. "Tea, please, and tell Sirza that his father is here." "Well, how is your health?" "You have not been here before. Look how pretty my veranda is," she went on, turning now to her husband, now to Slyudin. She spoke very simply and naturally, but too much and too fast. She felt this herself, especially as by the inquisitive way Slyodin looked at her, she noticed that he seemed to be watching her. Slyodin immediately went out onto the veranda, and she sat down by her husband. "You are not looking quite well," she said. "No," he replied. "The doctor came to see me this morning and robbed me of an hour. I feel that some friend of mine must have sent him. My health is so precious." "Yes, but what did he say?" She questioned him about his health and his work, persuading him to take a rest and to move out to her in the country. She said all this lightly, rapidly, and with peculiarly sparkling eyes, but Karenin did not now attach any importance to this tone of hers. He only heard her words, and gave them only their direct meaning, and he answered simply, though jokingly, "In all this conversation nothing particular passed." But never afterwards could Anna recall this short scene without being tormented by shame. Sirza came in, preceded by his governess. Had Karenin allowed himself to observe, he would have noticed the timid, confused look which the child cast first at his father and then at his mother, but he did not want to see and did not see anything. "Ah, young man, how he has grown. He is really getting quite a man. How do you do, young man?" And he held out his hand to the frightened boy. Sirza, who had always been timid with his father, now that the latter addressed him as a young man and that the question whether Vronsky was a friend or a foe had entered his head, shrank from him. He looked round at his mother as if asking for protection. Only with his mother he felt at ease. Karenin meanwhile talked to the governess with his hand on his son's shoulder, and Sirza felt so extremely uncomfortable that Anna saw he was about to cry. Anna, who had blushed when the boy came in, saw how distressed he was, and rising, lifted Karenin's hand off her son's shoulder, kissed the boy, led him out onto the veranda, and returned at once. "Well, it's time we were going," she said, glancing at her watch. "I wonder Betsy has not come." "Yes," said Karenin, and interlacing his hands, he cracked his fingers. "I also came to bring you some money, since nightingales are not fed on fables," he added. "I expect you want it." "No, I don't." "Yes, I do," she replied, without looking at him, and blushing to the roots of her hair. "But I suppose you will call here after the races." "Ah, yes," answered Karenin. "And here is the ornament of Peterov, the Princess Tvetskaya," he added, glancing out of the window at the approaching carriage of English build, with a small body placed very high. "What elegance, charming. Well then, we will start too." The Princess Tvetskaya did not get out. Only her footman in his black hat, cape, and gaiters jumped down at the front door. "I am going, goodbye," said Anna. And giving her son a kiss, she went up to Karenin and held out her hand to him. "You were very kind to me." Karenin kissed her hand. "Well then, au revoir. You will come back for tea, that is right," she said, and went out beaming and gay. But as soon as she ceased to see him, she became conscious of the place on her hand his lips had touched, and shuddered with disgust. All right, there we go, another chapter down. Anna is feeling disgust at a kiss from her husband. Is Anna the bad guy? I don't feel much for her. To be honest, I don't really sympathize with her. I think, or Vronsky for that matter. She just kind of... She's not awful. I'm not saying she's awful, but... She's not really like the good guy, is she? I think she might be the baddie. All right, have your say about this chapter over at the subreddit. Thank you very much for listening, and I will see you tomorrow.